the queen, the sorceress. Take a breath, you're sure to miss. Lord of the Rings and Cox-Hating Kiss. I'm the one who rules the space. Pray to God was given grace. Can't be replaced. Why? My coochie lace.
Welcome to Invasion of Privacy. I'm Kate Wolf, and today I have a first-time, very amazing guest and close friend, Carrie Shadle's here. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Okay. You didn't say anything at first. I was like, God damn it. I always have a fear of messing up names. No. Carrie, welcome.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
Well, it's amazing to have you. I've been trying to get you on, I think, for years, actually.
Yes. You've been talking to me about it for a long time.
So Carrie is an incredible therapist. And we went through the four-year program of our non-dual Kabbalistic healing school from a Society of Souls together. Mm-hmm. So, and it's to go through that class together as a group, it really is intensely bonding.
Yes.
Right?
Most definitely.
And very triggering, too, as a group.
Yes.
Because a lot of family dynamics show up, you know? It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very interesting how that stuff plays out while you go through the program and learn the studies, which don't have to do with like the personal, but totally have to deal with the personal.
Yes, completely.
So, yeah,
it's like a big therapy group.
Yes, and yet it's also filled with lectures, and you learn
learning
the healings and meditations.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there's a lot of room and space that's held for the stuff that arises that I guess reflects back a lot of our wounds.
Yes.
Collective wounds.
We get to see our wounds play out in the safe space within the class, which was so awesome to have Jeff Elias Frankel and Eileen Merman holding that space for us while people were triggered and everybody's
shattering.
Feelings came up and were shattered and sobbing on the floor with snot running down your face. I mean, it was that kind of deep, deep, intimate experience, but the space itself was held so sacred,
yes,
and so graciously by the leaders, not just Jeff and Eileen, but also their two assistants, Beth and Carrie, because holding a space for that many people and keeping it, maintaining the boundaries and keeping everyone safe and being there for everyone is, I can't imagine how exhausted they were at the end of a weekend. I know I was exhausted just because my brain hurt trying to take in all the new concepts and all the new ideas that they were presenting us with every weekend. But getting close to each other in that setting in ways I never imagined I could be like that in a group of people. And it healed me so much in being in a group.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never done well in groups. Groups, I always had a hard time in groups. From a little kid, I was really bullied by a group of kids in my neighborhood from the time I was like 3 until I was about 9. I had really bad experiences in groups. And I never figured out that's what that came from until that class.
Wow.
That there was that piece of my history that brought that up. So whenever I would get in a group, I would get at some point really defensive, take total offense with someone in the group, lash out in a way that I could only be rejected in the way that I lashed out. People automatically got their backs up. And so I would get rejected and then play out the whole dynamic that I create in a group based on my history, which is fascinating.
Healing work is so funny because it's so painful to revisit the scene of the crime, and yet it's so crucial to heal that pain that's
right.
locked in. But it's also, when you're in that place of a rejection wound or abandonment wound or any of those real fun wounds to swim in, it's for me, I experience it as like this swirling, like when you're in that emotion and, you know, but the school and the work does help you, especially being in that safe space. Anchor back probably into yourself. Well, they take you through the qualities of the Sephiroth and the Tree of Life. So that does a whole thing to you. But things like that came up all the time.
For everyone.
Yes.
I thought it was only me because
everyone.
I'm so out there with my interactions with people, and other people tend to withdraw when they get triggered instead of putting it out forward. Like you and I are both very similar in that way.
Yes.
We're always putting our stuff out there. Other people tend to retract and disappear and flee and freeze and all the different ways that we protect ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and protect our egos in those kinds of settings. since the class, my interactions in groups have been completely different.
That's incredible.
It is real. Talk about incredible is the right word. It feels miraculous to me because it's always been such a difficult arena for me to operate in. And right now I'm actually in a group, a collaborative law group, where we do peaceful conflict resolution in divorce with people in divorce. And it's a team approach. And it is a very kind approach, very inclusive, like non-dual is. And I've actually been able to use a lot of the non-dual concepts with it, have been very helpful. And I'm now the president of the group.
Oh my gosh, congrats,
which is
Carrie.
Amazing. This year is my year of El Presidente.
That's awesome.
I've been laughing. They have no idea who they have running the helm.
I think you're perfect for it. Non-duality
I am now.
Is, yes. You know, well, we were just saying this before we started. You and I have both changed and grown. I guess we've known each other about 5 years.
5 years.
But we were in the 4-year program, and then it continues to integrate. The work takes time to really embody. But you and I have both grown a ton, and I think non-duality is a hard concept to truly embody.
Yes.
And you're right in the heat of it with divorces.
Mm-hmm.
That's like divorces and breakups is where if you're going to get dualistic, it's going to be there, right?
It is so
you're
dualistic.
The bad guy.
Yeah.
I'm the good guy. You know,
right.
Everyone wants to be the good guy. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you feel the rejection or am I not good enough? The shame. So I love that you get to be the president of that group right now because you're perfect at that. And you try really hard to see both sides, or more than both. Sometimes there are tons of perspectives, but you're pretty good at trying to get all, it's all inclusive.
It's funny how my whole history leads to being able to see things from a non-dual perspective. I'm a middle child. I'm a Gemini.
Wow.
and my personality is... from the outside, I seem extroverted and very emotive. And yet on the inside, I'm actually an introvert who prefers to be by myself and has to get up my nerve to walk out the door and be in the world, which also has a lot to do with history. But I have my talents, my treasures, my being really lends itself to seeing both sides. It is not difficult for me.
That's awesome.
To imagine how one person can feel one way and the other person can feel completely differently, and they're both true.
Yes.
Both things are very real and very true. And my clients have such a hard time grasping that concept, why I'm saying the other person is also right. How can they both be right? And I tell them, it's like you're looking at a house and one of you is in the front yard and one of you is in the backyard.
Yep.
And it's still the same house with the same value, even though you both see it completely differently.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing to watch happen when people are able to get out of the black and white thinking. We get so stuck in, if you don't love me anymore, there's something wrong with you. You're bad. You're evil. You were wonderful when I married you. You were the best thing that ever happened. And now you're a complete dirtbag who's a terrible person and never done anything right. And everything's horrible. And you're out to get me. And reminding people of where they used to be helps them get out of that me or you. It's either me or you. It's not. We still can't be both. If
you have to like
married.
Exile that thing.
They have
or
to cut
person.
Off all the good stuff. They have to cut out all the good stuff like it never happened. And it's amazing how deeply that can go and how hard it is for people to get out of it.
Yeah. And it's really a shame when there are kids involved.
Yes.
When that super dualistic approach happens, because then the kids get in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're seeing the shift as divorce even becomes more accepted, even though it's not accepted everywhere. There are some people that are like, you got married, you got it, you know.
Yeah.
Look, as it becomes more accepted, it's like, okay, there are healthier ways to approach, which is non-duality.
Right.
Because no one, even, and look, I had to really learn this in my last breakup, because my first, instinct was the old one to go into, I'm the good guy, that person's the bad guy. And yet, because I want to grow, heal, and evolve, and I'm in the school, mm-hmm. it kept forcing me deeper within. Okay, you're getting triggered over that. What's this? How do you do that? What's this telling you or informing you in your system? Mm-hmm. How is this showing up? And just continuing to go back in and look at that place within me. Because I think that's right. normally what's happening, right? It's like mm-hmm. when you're that triggered,
yes.
there's something going on inside that's asking you to look at it. But yes. that is not easy.
No, when you're very busy blaming the other person for how you're feeling, it's quite a safe position to keep you from looking at your part of the pie.
Yeah.
And I do work with couples that are married and want to stay married. And then I do work with couples that are in the process of transitioning from a one-home family to a two-home family. And the work is very similar because often I think people shouldn't be getting divorced. If they could calm down enough to look at their own stuff, they would be able to save their marriage and move forward if they took the focus off their partner and put it back on themselves. But it's so hard to do. It really, really is. And a lot of stuff, as you know, that people are running from is tremendously painful, and they're afraid. It feels like they're going to shatter if they really acknowledge anything that's going on. Lately, I've had a very interesting phenomenon that I've really want to do more research on. I'm having experience with men who have been sexually abused as children, who have never shared it, and are now having affairs in their marriage.
Oh, wow.
And the connection between the sexual abuse and the acting out sexually in their marriage is incredible. It's really so clear to me how deeply, deeply that is connected.
Wow.
And usually when they start to feel ignored in their marriages, they feel ignored, they feel criticized, they feel they don't do anything right. Their wife is constantly telling them what to do and trying to run the show and telling them, and she's doing everything she thinks she's supposed to be doing as a wife and mother. She's supposed to be taking care of them, even though as women, we try not to fall into that, you know, housemaker, homemaker, you know, the woman does everything. Most marriages I see aren't like that anymore, but we still end up in the traditional roles and trying to do what we think we're supposed to do as a good spouse. And often in doing that, we come across as a controlling critic.
Yeah.
And then people go somewhere else to feel good.
We all want to just feel not just good, but I think it's about authenticity,
yes.
right? Where
yes.
a lot of us, we change our shapes into something to try to not lose that person.
Right.
And what we really all want is the freedom to be who we are, even if it's as simple as getting to fart when you want to fart, right? Like which sounds so simple. And yet when you're holding back so many things, including mm-hmm. your farts,
mm-hmm.
you're sucking who you are in a sense. I'm not saying you should just go and fart in everyone's face, obviously. And I'm using farting as one little example because it could be cooking for someone too much when you don't have mm-hmm. the energy, or taking care of all of the laundry, or mm-hmm. or it could be being the only financial provider, but feeling the pressure like you have to. It can be in so many different arenas.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're not getting to be or even explore
right.
who you really are, you start to tick, which can lead to affairs because you're really just looking for freedom and someone who allows you that kind of freedom. Intimacy is into you, mm-hmm. I see.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be seen as who we really are.
Right.
And sometimes we get stuck wearing these masks and playing roles that aren't even us. That's why I think I've been single for a bit too. Well, I'm all about the twin flame stuff, which is a whole mm-hmm. other story. But I'm at a point where I'd way rather be single than right. trying to change my shape and not be me. I mean, there's nothing more painful, I think,
right.
than holding back who you really are.
That's true, Kate, when you're where you and I are, where we've done.
Oh, yes.
You know, our path has led us down this deep, deep work of recognizing our own humanness and including everything about ourselves and recognizing how much freer we are, not hiding everything we are, to the point that trying to meld ourselves into a shape that is not true to us is excruciating.
Excruciating.
And a lot of people live like that every day, all day long. I mean, here's this man that's had an affair, And here's this woman who has been bending over backwards, working full time, taking care of the babies, cooking, making sure that, you know, she's taking care of everything that needs to be taken care of, and she's bringing in the money, and she's working so hard, and she's putting all her needs aside. She's not getting her hair done. Oof. She's not doing this for herself. She's not doing that. And he has the nerve to have an affair.
Yeah. It's a recipe for disaster on both ends. And I love, right, we're talking about non-duality here. Both parties, when you don't have your needs met, man, I couldn't, I know lots and tons of people are living like that, and there's no judgment on that.
Oh, none at all.
But there's no way someone like me or you at this point in our journey,
mm-hmm,
I've even tried, like, my first engagement when I was in my early 20s, as soon as I got engaged, my body immediately, and this was before, way before my spiritual awakening,
mm-hmm,
but thank God even then, I didn't know it was a gift then, started quaking with so much anxiety and panic attacks, I was basically forced into calling off the wedding because my body was giving up. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had a choice to make then. Do I listen?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I try to really shove this down? And thank God I listened. But I think a lot of people, especially once you get engaged, they're so scared to call it off and disappoint the families involved. Yeah. And it's like, I can't, mm-hmm, wait till we shift to a more heart-centered place where we support people in doing what they really want to do instead of forcing themselves into things that their souls are screaming at them. It's a shame we live in a society still where it's like a certain kind of success is
the only kind that counts.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, let me see it in a certificate. And look, trophies, mm-hmm, are cool. That's great. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it's really about being happy and free.
And I think you really hit the nail on the head. We are morphing as a race, you know, as human beings, to a different place that we've never been before. And
amen.
So many people.
And thank God.
Yeah, thank God. When I think back to myself in my 30s, early 30s, when I got married, you know, even though we have this idea that we don't want marriage to look like it did in the 50s, where the woman is, you know, home with the babies and the house and the cooking, and the man is out earning the money, even though we don't want it to look that way, and people say, you know, I got married and we're going to have an equal partnership and we're going to do these things, it's much more complex than just wanting to do it differently. And people end up doing what they think they're supposed to be doing rather than what they're good at.
Or even what they want to do,
what
right?
What they want to do.
Yeah.
We all have particular talents. And what if the woman is better at doing laundry and he's better at cooking? You know, okay, let him cook. But in her mind, I'm Italian. The woman cooks. You know, which isn't true of all Italian families. It's a gross generalization. But, you know, so we go on our history of how we're supposed to be, blocking ourselves from doing what would be the most authentic, the most true to not only ourselves, but to our partners.
Yeah.
Because it's not the way it's supposed to look. It's not supposed to be like that.
And this includes resting, too, I think. Like, because sometimes I really, my body aches sometimes and I just need a rest. And a lot of people push that down, too. Especially if you're in a relationship where you don't want to seem lazy or something.
Right.
And I could never put up with that. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
The great thing about being single is when I need to rest, I can do it. And sometimes I have my own judgment beating myself up over it that I can, right, work with. But it's already hard enough doing that. I could never be in a relationship with someone where I felt like there was any kind of pressure. Do you know what I mean? To like override my system in any way or to like,
yes,
force myself even to sexually engage. Cause that happens where,
yes,
sometimes people aren't feeling it or there's issues. And then the other person's like, well, this means I'm rejected. So if I can somehow force the sexual thing to happen, then I can convince myself this is still a functioning thing. But then what happens is, mm-hmm, lots of forcing of whether it's not resting when you need a rest or forcing yourself to sexually engage.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways you can forcing yourself to cook when you have zero in the tank.
Right.
Being single, if it's that, if I'm at like depleted in the tank, we'll say,
mm-hmm,
then you got to do fucking, what's one of the order, like delivery.com or Seamless, Grubhub. Yeah. Like, you know,
mm-hmm,
but those people in great relationships, I'm sure, know how to work with that honesty. But
can you imagine having a relationship where you're separate but equal? Both of your needs are equally important. You're not going to be able to meet everybody's needs all of the time.
Sex life popping.
Right. But the respect and thoughtfulness is given to each person to excel where they excel, to recognize their own limitations and able to ask for help without being disregarded or dismissed or talked over or, you know, I often tell my couples, one of the hardest things in coupleship is to recognize that just because something isn't important to you doesn't mean it's not important. Because we so easily dismiss what's important to someone else if it's not important to us. It just, they must be, it can't be that intense. It can't be that big a deal. I mean, come on. Really?
That's our
Why
whole
is
society.
This such a big deal to you? Oh, yes, we completely dismiss how someone else could feel about something if we can't relate to it.
Emotional sensitivity and just sensitivity in general is a real thing that I think is part of the change we're feeling, is actually listening, especially to children and adults. But it starts there, where when a kid's saying this hurts, whether it's physically, emotionally, actually listening, you know, none of this like pat on the butt, like go get 'em, tiger. When, you know, it's like really listening when even a kid's tired or where they're crying, and, you know, no more of this like forcing it down. That's why I hate teachers who assign tons of homework, because they're really not listening to a kid's stress level.
Right.
Because after sitting at a desk, I don't think kids should be sitting at desks for 6.5 hours anyway. There should be a lot more movement. But to then assign a crap load of homework, if you talk to kids, I used to be a teacher and talk to them all the time. It's not that they just don't like it. Their systems are being overwhelmed. And then they're also dealing with bullying and depression that they're picking up from their parents who are in denial or whatever. We all just need to start really listening to each other's sensitivities. And then, but a lot of us that we want to force, you know, it's like, well, you override your needs to make, to meet my needs. Right. And the moment we can just titrate a little bit and feel even what our own needs are. I have a hard time accepting my own needs and desires still. In one of my spiritual groups I'm in, I was talking about my vulnerability, and I unconsciously, I tried to fix it, but I heard it. I called, I said my, I attached the word loser to when I said vulnerable. And of course I caught it quickly, but I was like, interesting.
Yes.
I'm still judging the really young one who just needs. We come into this world needing to suckle at the breast, needing to be held, needing to be changed. And yet so many of us are still ashamed for just being needy human beings who want connection and need connection. And I'm still working on how young, I mean, I, you know, I won't, but like you and I both, we have these young places.
Yes. Very much.
Just want to be heard. It's hard to accept sometimes.
It's like the word attention. Needing attention has gotten such a bad rap.
Yes.
In the last 20 years. It's like if you need attention, if you're acting out, they just want attention. They're just attention seeking. They're just, you know, trying to be the center of the show. Yeah. Well, there's a reason people do that.
Yeah.
And if we don't get attention as babies, we die. It's called death by abandonment.
Yep.
We literally die if someone doesn't touch us, doesn't actually physically connect with us. We die. Even if we have food and shelter, if we don't have the physical connection, the spiritual look in my eyes connection with people, we are wounded beyond ability to survive. So if someone's attention seeking, my first thought is, what is it they need that they're not getting?
Amen.
You know, that they're not getting. And I think we're responsible for teaching our children how to manage their own needs and take responsibility for their own needs.
And I think to ask. Sorry, keep going.
To be able to ask for what they need rather than having to act it out.
Yes. which I'm trying to learn as an adult. Yes. Because when you don't get those needs met, at least on my end, I know we're similar, but I'll let you speak for yourself. You almost get so mad they're not being met. Mm-hmm. That then you, like you're saying, you lash out. And then you're like, well, of course they don't want to meet my needs. I just lashed out that they weren't being met from the first place. But once right. again, we're not in a society where it's like cool yet.
Yes.
To say, oh, well, I'm learning, you know, with friends even to finally be like, I need you.
Yes.
You feel weak, mm-hmm. but it's not weakness. It's actually a strength to finally, even if it's from a young place, yeah. I really need you. You know, like. Yes.
It takes courage to ask for help. Yeah. It really does. It takes more courage to ask for it than it does to hide and try to do it by ourselves.
Yes.
It's so, we are such fascinating, complex creatures.
Seriously.
I just love it. It's really, I fall in love with every single one of my clients. I just think the tenacity of the human spirit and the things people overcome is unbelievable. And then to look at it from a non-dual perspective, and I just had this conversation with a couple of people just this past week about to stop fighting the way their brain works. Mm. This is the way your brain works. It's going to work like this forever. It's not going to...
Well, you can change the pathways.
You can change the pathways, but if you keep trying to make it totally different, then you're just making it work harder. You know, it's that the beauty of non-duality, that if we pull the things closer to us that we hate about ourselves the most, we can heal. And by pushing them away, by rejecting them and cutting them off, we only create more wound.
Yep.
It's such a mind-blowing concept that, oh, you want me to pull the shit closer to me? You want me to really hug that ugliest, most disgusting, grossest, shameful part of me, you know, is supposed to be okay and I'm supposed to want to keep that? It's so hard. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. It's still every day I get it on a deeper level.
Seems paradoxical at first. You're like, for me, as I learn to trust more, distrust co-arises with it.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to bring in the distrust, it feels paradoxical. You're like, wait, I'm supposed to look at how much I distrust this path or myself, or in order for me to actually be seated in trust differently.
Right.
But at first you feel like you're spiraling, or, you know, like when you do bring in, whether it's distrust or a monstrous place or a needy place, at first it makes you feel almost out of control to bring it in.
Yes.
But then it can actually locate and another thing happens. But it's, I've been bringing in distrust and I wake up and I'm like, no, this was already there. You're pushing it down.
Right. It's so amazing how the tiniest bit of shift in perspective can change everything.
I know.
You know, can
it's
change.
So trippy.
Can change everything. I had a conversation. You had mentioned politics earlier, and I don't discuss politics because it's just a deep, deep sea that I don't wish to swim in publicly.
Do you discuss them not publicly? Or not even?
Only with very close friends.
Got it. Are you interested? You just don't want to?
Oh, yes. I'm interested. Okay. I just don't want to get into the public argument. But I was speaking with someone about the difficulty. They're very passionate and one of those people that gives us hope for the country with their views and their passion and their enthusiasm of having to deal with their family who has completely different views. And every time they get in a conversation, it turns into a big argument. Like we had when Trump first got elected, the families going to Thanksgiving dinner, the families were fighting with each other and everyone was getting up in arms about who was right and who was wrong. If we bring in the non-duality, I said, if you're trying to convince someone why their opinion is wrong, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Because it makes us dig in our heels and just fight harder. If you want them to see your point, talk about what it is that you love, what it is that you're passionate about, what it is that you like, why you think your candidate is so fabulous. And they don't have to agree with you. But if you want them to know information that you don't think they have, then don't try to shove it down their throat. Because they're just going to dig in and shut down and everybody gets defensive and no one gets heard.
Yeah.
No one gets hurt. So you can even bring that into politics.
Yeah.
You know, if everyone just talked about what they were passionate about and let other people be what they're passionate about,
yeah,
we could see each other's opinions so much more easily.
The word shoving down people's throats is so huge. It's kind of what we were talking about before we were podcasting too with ourselves.
Right.
Is when you have an opinion, I love the way you're saying it. You can be passionate about something and share it from a soft, but not doesn't have to be soft, but like a place that just owns it. But when you start shoving, whether it's, opinions or just you in general, which, trust me, I've had a lot of experience with, unfortunately. But when you come at it from that forceful energy, no one can receive or take in in that place. But by all means, I love what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Passion is great when it's not coming from a defended, exiled place.
It's more like educating people as opposed to trying to make them believe what you want them to believe. If you, if I'm trying to tell you why your beliefs are wrong, even if I have facts about it, we as human beings do not want to let go of what we think is true.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone tries to take that away from us without our ability to have a choice about it, we're going to fight them tooth and nail and we're never going to get anywhere. But if we educate people on different modalities, different perspectives, different ways of thinking that we've found really helpful, that we really like, that we really use, then they have the opportunity to pick and choose what makes sense to them.
Yep.
You know, I have one of my big passions is, in fact, race and what goes on in the black and white world out there. There are, while I think we have come tremendously far, we still have an incredibly long way to go. And it is still so important to me that we recognize how there are people in our country who have to think twice about leaving their house because the world is just a very, very dangerous place for them simply because of the way they look. And how we are so conditioned to believe certain things about people. And I, you know, being white, I have had the unique perspective of adopting a biracial child who is now an adult and married to an amazing, beautiful black man. And they now have what to me is the grandmother, the most amazing child on the planet because he's my grandson. So he's, of course, the best thing ever. But my experiences raising that child, being a white woman and taking out a black child into the world and taking her around with me and taking her places I would go as a white person and watching what would happen to her. Even with all of my education into cultural diversity, all of my training never prepared me for the reality of what it's actually like. And it's not just, you know, I mean, this still happens today. If we go shopping and people don't realize she's with me, she gets followed within 5 minutes of walking into a store.
Seriously.
I mean, it just happened to us the other day. She's like, I had another detective up my ass. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's just, and she does not look like a hood rat, folks. She is a beautiful woman who maintains her makeup and her hair and dresses well. And she, you know, she looks like average Joe citizen out in the world doing her business just like anyone else.
Now I look currently like someone that needs to be followed. No, I'm joking. I got this rainbow.
Well, even with rainbow the hair and the tattoos and all the, you know, all the fun stuff. Now that catches my eye because it's beautiful and it's interesting and it's
art. Thank you.
But my daughter catches the eye because she could possibly be a criminal. And the way we view...
I've seen pictures of your daughter. She's gorgeous.
So beautiful. And I can say that because she has nothing to do with me. I had nothing to do with the way that she looks.
Yeah,
she
but you're gorgeous too. So
she does not have 1 ounce of my DNA, which is very lucky for her. It's just incredible how we are so conditioned to believe that someone different from us is inherently dangerous. And I think that is a human trait. It is a human instinct. And it's so easy for stereotypes to play on that unique fear, you know, on that instinctual fear of if someone's different from me, they're not familiar and the unfamiliar is dangerous. So that automatically goes up. Overcoming that, we see it in little kids. If they're not taught to be afraid of it, they're not afraid of it. But it just is so insidious in the newspapers and movies and TV. And although, have you seen that the show that came out on Netflix, When They See Us?
No.
Oh my gosh. Every white person in America should watch that
show.
Is
this the one that...
It's one about the Central Park Five.
Okay.
The five men who were accused of raping the white woman.
Oh, okay.
And have spent 20 years in prison and they were falsely accused. There is so much conditioned racism that went on in that situation. Having a black child, a black male child in my family, it was terrifying. I could barely stand to watch it.
Our justice system is so corrupt, not just with race, but just in general. When you go into prisons and you just watch how people with power treat anyone who suddenly mm-hmm. is in the powerless situation, like, we just have so many dark secrets that we don't want to look at. Racism is one of the biggest ones that's real, but people don't want to face it. And what it really comes down to, this is going to sound corny, but it's loving people, loving everyone
mm-hmm.
for real.
Yes, like, for real.
Not just, we're talking skin color, we're talking religion, politics, all like,
mm-hmm.
and when I say loving everyone, I don't mean going up and giving everyone a hug. You know,
right.
It's more of the love of just respect.
Right.
Like, you can exist as you are and I can exist as I am. But there's just so much
mm-hmm.
fear, and it's like unconscious fear that leads the way.
Right.
And God, it needs to change. But I'll tell you what, the shift is already here
mm-hmm.
and the evolution's happening. So for those who really want to fight it, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all are going down. They ain't listening to this podcast anyway. This is not a racist, anti-Semitic person's podcast to listen to. You know what I mean? I'm sure they're going to, like, what, Tommy Lauren? You know that chick?
If you look at it, though, from both ways, people who are racist or anti-Semitic, if you look at it from a view of non-duality, again, what is going on here? How much
fear.
Conditioning?
Yeah.
How much conditioning, you know, do people grow up with that they are completely unconscious about? We're unconscious about how conditioned we are to behave in a certain way in the role of husband, in the role of wife, in the role of gay man, in the role of gay woman, in the role of a Jew, in the role of a Christian. We're conditioned to believe certain things about those states. And we're unconscious of that conditioning, unconscious of those beliefs. The only way to get past that conditioning, to me, is to share experiences and education with an open mind. Otherwise, and that goes for both sides, both the persecuted and the persecuting. I know I have worked with guards in prison systems who are incredible people.
Yeah.
Who are kind, who are compassionate, who really, you know, like working with the people they work with in the prisons. You know, I've worked with a lot of cops, and there are so many really good law enforcement people out there who are just incredible. I don't think that Blue Lives Matter or Black Lives Matter. I think Black Lives Matter too. Blue Lives Matter too. All of our lives matter. Black lives have been denied and dismissed for so long that we've needed to bring special attention to them. But to dismiss one or the other, we need to be open and looking at all of it, even the ones that are completely different from our own points of view.
That's what I think Black Lives Matter to me means. Like, Black Lives Matter, it's like, we're focusing on them because they're the ones being persecuted and innocent black people are being shot.
Right.
But for me, that doesn't mean police lives don't matter.
Right.
You know,
that's
anyone
it was
who,
taken.
But some people, especially those who have witnessed so much police brutality
mm-hmm.
that they become so conditioned to hate police. But I hear what you're saying. You know, that's why non-duality is about hearing where everyone's coming from. Now, it would be hard for both of us to sit in a room with a blatant racist
mm-hmm.
and hear
and to stay open and to stay
it would be more
civil and
yeah.
calm and not take offense and not
oof,
climb
I don't
up
know
on my
if that's
horse.
The job for me because like because there's not for me it's like I'm not what can they say like I can hear someone who'd be like look I was conditioned by my parents to like if they were able to own it and wanted to change
mm-hmm.
but if someone was going to be like if someone was like for real like this kind of life matters less, because I would be like, check, please, check, please, check, please. Right. Like, racism is so, this is going to sound so bad, girl. Racism is like so uncool, Carrie.
it's politically incorrect.
It's like, we just don't fuck with it anymore. Like, let's get real fucking high school cool girl about it then. It's not cool to be racist, anyone. Once again, I'm sure
I have a fucking dragon
on my logo. I'm saying I don't think those people are listening to me at all, because I'm a comedian who talks about my vagina on stage. I'm not for people, you know, if there's one of those people that's racist and thinks women belong in the kitchen making them sandwiches, they don't fuck with me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But in general, it's really not cool to be like a misogynist, to talk about women degradingly, to be a racist, anti-Semite. Like, it's like...
But do people grow up and say, I want to be a racist? Do they grow up and say, I want to be a misogynist? Let me see how many ways I can keep women down. Now, some guys do. You know, there are evil people in every area of the human race. I mean, there evil exists in black and white in every area. So I'm not saying there aren't anyone who doesn't grow up and think that. But they are created. They are not born.
True.
And... you know, I have had, when I was growing up, I grew up in Washington, D.C., which at the time was a predominantly black city. D.C. has always been a black city. And I had really bad experiences with black folk when I was growing up. When I was 18, my father and I would drive home from downtown D.C. together. We would drive through a black neighborhood. I had rocks thrown at us in the car. I had people charge our car. I took all my friends out to a comedy club, and we had a convertible, and I was driving, and we went to leave one night, and we were waiting to pull out on the street, and a gang of black guys came up and smacked me in the back of the head and attacked our car, and I had to drive off in terror. So it's not like I haven't been treated badly by black people. That does not make all black people bad. So, you know, but if you look back at people's experiences and what they were taught to believe, the most racist client I ever had finally told me that when she was 16, she got really drunk and she was raped by three black guys. She had nothing but horrible things to say about black people. Now, those three guys were in no way representative of the black race. That was her experience. She feared black people.
So she stereotyped based on that experience.
So she stereotyped them all, and society supported it. Society totally supported it. So, you know, this is how things are made.
Because, you know, we'll use that as an example. She, because of the pain and the trauma she experienced, she wasn't able to stay open to humans in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because when that kind of a thing happens to you, suppose it had been three Jewish men, you know, then it could have easily been, oh, Jews are like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to stay open after. Yeah. So, yeah. Because humans, we're steeped in this aggression. Oh. I mean, we won't get into politics. You don't have to say anything here. But our president, this is my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie's staying
That's
quiet
fine.
Right now.
You have allowed that.
We have totally a sexual predator as a president.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still being taught that a certain kind of aggression not just isn't acceptable, but gets... praised, or there's a better word that I'm missing.
Excused,
but like, you can become president.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just
rewarded.
Get excused. There you go. Rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because that kind of aggressiveness can get you to look like the man, in a sense, whether it's in college or whatever. And I think that's hopefully what's changing and alchemizing collectively is Trump, man. He's really, whether you voted for him or didn't, he was a real catalyst to this looking at the dualistic nature that's been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It just brought it more up to the surface.
And talk about things holding things close together.
Yeah.
Look at during his time in the presidency, we have had more disclosure of sexual assault by people in power than we ever had at any other time in history.
Yes.
So talk about non-duality and sexual predator being rewarded versus sexual predators being exposed and punished. And the two of them are happening simultaneously in ways that they never have before. So, you know, this is the non-duality that we have been taught to look at and think about, and the perspective that we need to work with. It's one does not exist without the other. There's nothing wrong with aggression. We need it to survive. And yet, when we talk about aggression, people are like, oh, no, you shouldn't do that. It's not right. Blah, 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 blah. I wanted to throw a party when I think it was it Washington or Oregon, where they passed the law that if two people wanted to fight and they both agreed that they could fight, the police would stand back and let them fight.
What, really?
Oh, yes.
I don't know how I feel about that.
It is
that.
In our nature.
But like,
it's
but
totally in but our like, nature.
See, I would prefer that in like a boxing ring or
well, that's
a rage
how they would
room.
Do it. They would stand aside and they would be there to make sure nobody killed anybody.
Well, I like it more, and I'm not like a huge fan of like UFC or those things, but we definitely need positive outlets for aggression. Is a huge system. We can even, it's making me think of Gevora Hesed from the Tree of Life. I won't go too much into it for the listeners, but Gevora on the Tree is about structure, fire, justice, and it makes me like when that's an Oneg positive energy system, it has that thing in it. And then of course I have to say the other side, Hesed, mercy, flow, water,
which we all think of as the best side because it's all the good stuff that we're taught to really like and want to be like. We're going to be good girls, we're going to be nice, we're going to be polite, we're going to be politically
mercy.
correct.
Yeah,
we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings,
but
we
you
want to
need
help
both
others.
That's the truth.
You totally need both. You absolutely need both.
Yes.
And the duality of that was so freeing for me that I'm allowed as a human being to recognize my own power as an aggressor, to recognize my own ability to seek justice when things go wrong, that is just as valuable a part of me as a woman, as a human being, as being the good little unconditional giver who only takes care of people and wants good stuff for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't have to be like that. That was so freeing for me.
Yeah.
In ways that I can't even begin to explain. So incredibly healing that those parts of myself were not something bad to be cut off and shut down and pushed away.
Yeah. No, I get it. Because you and I are also, I mean, this is within everyone, but you and I are fiery women. So I think when you get to really include your fire and the desire for justice, which we all have within, and just structure. I mean, when they taught it, and I'm not going to go too much into this, but they compared it to a river with the banks along the side.
Right.
With just Hesed, it's chaos. There's no land to, you know, this whole... all of life, you know, it's structure and balance with that flow. So it's very, non-duality is just a very healing concept, and it's completely necessary for us healing and getting to the next stage of our human evolution.
Right.
And hopefully connecting to the aliens. Well, we already are connected. Becoming more conscious.
So what are you hearing about Area 51 and
the
assault on Area
this?
51? I've been hearing about it. I haven't really read a whole lot.
Shane's the one that told me. He's like, right now about 3,000 people are planning on...
storming Area 51 and getting the information out of it.
Which honestly, look, I like the intent of like us uncovering... The government knows there are aliens. There's alien involvement. First of all, we're on an intergalactic council, but that's a whole... I don't even know how much the government's on that or not. But aliens are obviously here. I don't know how much storming Area 51, which is like a very guarded government facility. I don't think it's going to go well. In my fantasy today, they just open the doors and they give this like tour. But then we'll see who'd actually... Can you imagine storming it and they open the doors if you'd actually feel safe walking in?
That's a very good question.
Because they could trap, I mean, if you're, whatever. So I don't need to go into Area 51 to know aliens are here, to know that the government knows. You could always listen to Bashar on YouTube. He's an alien channel.
Oh.
Instead of storming Area 51.
Just listen,
listen to
him.
My man, Bashar. He's dope. But yeah, I just think I like the intent of, yeah, we deserve that knowledge, but to storm it, it's like, I don't, I mean, whatever.
It's a little bit overly aggressive. Although people have been trying to get information about it forever without success. And this is what happens when we feel like we need something and no one is listening.
That's true, though.
We keep upping the ante to get what we we need, whatever that may be.
I would love more alien information. I mean, I feel like I have. You can go on the internet and get tons of alien information, and if you want to even like meet an alien, there are tons of locations even in the US and sites that have tons, like where the ships are going in and out. Like if you really want to, you could just go meet an alien. But
we'll have to do that one day.
I'm down. Like, you know, I talk to them all the time. I did a past life regression hypnosis thing years ago where the aliens were are like always around me. Arcturians, my homies. I love a lot of the aliens, but anyway, what I'm loving about the conversation is I went on Twitter and everyone's like hashtagging alien shit, and that's never going to make me sad. So it's they're coming more into our consciousness.
Right.
We need to connect to them. There are so many advanced ancient alien civilizations that are here that we could learn from in terms of cleaning up the earth and their technologies. So
I don't think we're healthy enough yet for them to come near us.
I think people, I think
we're getting there.
The shift's going to happen very quickly because those of us who really want to save this planet, because we have to, it's like, yeah, some of these people are going to be terrified. They're the same people, I think, that are like, women should be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. I hate any other race other than white. I love when I do my Southern. It's so like.
I was going to say, why is that only Southern people?
I don't know.
You know, I love people a lot of color Southern people. Actually, in the South, they feel like at least they're honest about how racist they are. Whereas up here in the North, everybody acts like they're not, but behaves like they are.
So it's more insidious.
Yes, it's much more insidious and much harder to determine racist, when you're going to have a good experience.
Anyone racist, like Southern or not, that's just my silly, because I have very limited range in terms of accents as of now. And but I lived in Maryland, so I got good at that.
Isn't that
it is, but you're right.
A racist person? Is it someone from the South?
No, and you're right, because it's everywhere. Although, you know, we have a mutual friend who is in the South, the area, who says it is worse there collectively, but there are tons of racists up in the North, and it just needs to stop in general. Like, it's just unacceptable. Sexual predators are unacceptable. Like, and that's even coming from a non-dual place. I'm willing to hear. I could hear anyone out, like even a murderer, I could hear, but I still might be like, bye.
Doesn't mean it's okay to murder people.
Yeah, or be racist or whatever. But because we're all given different scenarios and situations, and then it is up to you, I think, to a big degree, how you ride it and how you grow and how loving you become.
Right.
But that's not about forced loving, because those people are the worst, who like pretend, you know what I mean? Like, you can't force that, but whatever, just like, I'm going to say something so stupid, just like, don't be racist. How about that? No. I do wish that, but the times, they are a-changing.
Yes.
And
one of my clients has a t-shirt that I totally love that says, if you have to be racist, sexist, and homophobic, why don't you just be quiet?
Yeah,
it's pretty apt.
I mean, that
I'm not
going to
fight with you,
too,
just
though.
Keep it to yourself.
Because sometimes those people who keep it to themselves, then they end up building bombs in their basements and shit, right?
Well, yeah. I think those are people who have completely disconnected from society.
Yeah.
If you look at the kids that do
you
the school shootings, they are the ones who are completely disconnected from humanity.
Don't you think to be racist, you have to be disconnected?
No.
Really?
I
think
not
so.
I believe that.
To be racist, you're disconnecting to a very human part of yourself.
But here's the part, Kate. You're talking about extremes of racism. It's like extremes of Islam. Extremes
I think
of
to
racism.
Be, well, yeah, to be extreme of
all
anything,
of us
you're
are
disconnected
racist
in a sense.
At some point, in some level.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about
because of our condition,
that,
it is unconscious racism. Well, that's what I'm talking about. There's a spectrum
be,
of racism.
If you're legit, in my opinion, you don't have to agree.
If
you
you're
are
to
legit,
kill people different than you, you got a problem.
Not even just kill. If you legit hate gay people, any kind of, even if you're black and you hate white people, although I guess I can kind of understand where that comes from, but I think to hate, even if it's in a breakup and you hate the other person, I think you are semi-disconnected because you're exiling But it's also linked to poison ground and childhood wound. Because look, I'm not saying I'm not ever disconnected. I'm trying to heal my disconnects. It's not showing up in racism. It's showing up in other areas.
Right.
Even self-hate is a disconnect. I mean, I think most of us, in a sense, we're in a disconnected society to even have a sexual predator as a president. Because we turn our heads. That the president's one example. There's so much, and you know this, you're a therapist. There's so much abuse that happens in homes. And then we're still walking around with the facades and the smiles. Like, many of us still aren't really
putting on the show.
Yeah, so.
And I think the more we get into the technology that we're using all the time, and the faster we move, the faster our society moves, the more we expect from ourselves and each other, the more disconnected we become.
I think it depends. I think social, well, not just, you didn't say social media. I think technology is doing both a lot of oneg and nega depending.
Right.
But I feel like we've come so far as a society because, damn, we had fucking slavery not that long ago.
No, we have come a tremendous way. I just think the overuse of connecting with each other on a screen is, and mostly just moving so quickly, is thinking that we have to do all the time. It makes us unable to look each other in the eye, to have real conversations, to share joyous experiences when you're really busy trying to get to work, trying to get home from work, trying to pay the bills, trying to take the kid to hockey, trying to take the other kid to dance, trying to do this, trying to do that, trying to keep the house clean, trying to keep the meal on the table.
Anxiety
people are exhausted and they're very anxious.
Yeah.
How can you not be?
I get it. Yeah. Sucks.
But if you stop, what happens?
You feel it.
Yeah.
I know. Well, you know, I would say, because we got to wrap it up, the answer's healing work, going to therapy, talking about your feelings, no matter where you're at on that spectrum.
Right.
Just not holding it all into yourself, because that kind of isolation.
Right. And here's the non-duality. We're going faster and faster and faster. And meditation has never been more popular.
It's true.
In our efforts to slow down, meditation and yoga is booming. And I think that's our natural seeking of healing for too much of one and not enough of the other.
Well, we're trying to always search for peace amongst the chaos. So, and there are a lot of changes. I'm not upset with the changes personally because I'm ready for a lot of shifts. But I also agree with what you're saying of putting the phone down and connecting to nature. That needs to be, I think, part of the shift is loving our Mother Earth more and appreciating and feeling her within all of us.
The connection.
Yeah. So, but I'm ready for the change in the sense of actual fulfillment and not all this nega netzach, which is like the false victory.
Right.
You know, it's, I don't even want to say easy. It's one thing to look successful externally, but then to still feel empty inside. I'm personally over that, and I know so many. We actually want to feel fulfilled.
Yes.
We might have fooled everyone around us, but if you're still not feeling that, and I think unfulfillment's, to link it back, it's when you're not feeling authentic or free or able to explore who you really are.
Right.
So that's where I hope, that's when I say I want a fast shift. I would love people to start feeling more free to actually speak their truth, and even if it includes their pain.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
I got to put something out there for people who are considering any kind of divorce, of transitioning their family. Look for collaborative law. Look for collaborative attorneys. Look for collaborative therapists.
Can they come to you?
They can come to me. They can go
online.
Plug your
stuff. Tell me.
Well, it's in, I'm down in Central Jersey in the Red Bank area. So I work in Monmouth County and Ocean County. But there are collaborative groups all throughout New Jersey. And it's actually being used throughout the world.
Awesome.
It is a team approach to conflict resolution that is so kind and so healing. And it really helps people transition in their lives without destroying their children, destroying their bank accounts, destroying themselves. It is Our courts are a mess.
And this is mostly for like divorce?
It's used in divorce. It's used in elder law. It's used in labor law. They used it in Ireland with, you know, the conflicts in Ireland to bring peace about with that. Mediation and collaborative is
it's the way.
So human. It is really the way. I'm with the Jersey Shore Collaborative Law Group. Down south. But I also, Kate, want to thank you for having me today. It's been a real pleasure.
I was so scared
of coming and doing this with you. I'm like, what's a podcast? I'm so like not technological, but
I knew you were going to be amazing.
Wow, it's been great to be here. Great to be here with you.
Well, thank you. And I love that we talked so much about non-duality, and I love what you're doing with the collaborative with
collaborative law.
Collaborative mm-hmm. law. That's the first time I've heard of that term, and it sounds right where we need to
right
be evolving to.
Mm-hmm.
And her name again is Carrie Shadle. So if they want to find you on the internet, where should they go to?
You could go on Psychology Today under Therapist Finder and just look up in the Red Bank area. My profile comes up there.
Carrie
Shadle, LCSW, and my company is Legacy Consulting, LLC. It's the legacy we're leaving for our children. And the collaborative law group is Jersey Shore Collaborative Law. If you Google it, it'll come right up for you, along with the other groups and the different organizations nationwide.
Legacy is a cool name, too. We'll talk names after. But I'm like, ooh, legacy. I love that you're affiliated with that. That's some powerful queenship, Carrie.
Yeah,
good for you.
Interesting.
All right. So for me, follow me on Instagram, Twitter, at the Kate Wolf. For a healing, non-dual Kabbalistic healing, a tarot reading, please reach out, kwolf2fs27@gmail.com. And then this coming Wednesday, I'm going to be in Montclair at Joyist. My friend owns this incredible juice bar / restaurant, healthy foods place. And I'll be reading tarot from her store on Wednesday. I believe like between 11 and 2 or something in that arena. So if you're in the area and you want to get a tarot card reading in person, go to Joyist. I'll be plugging that on my social media as well. So thanks again, Carrie, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, and thanks everyone for listening. Bye.
Who is it? It's Sauron. The war in me has just begun. My truth will always be sung. Over and over we will be one. My enemies, they lie with it. Self-destruct my biggest sin. I won't stop, so it begins, and we march on like minions.
Lordess of the rings, Lordess of the rings, Lordess of the rings, Lordess of the rings.
I'm the hero, 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 the hero.